Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
This episode of the Steve Austin Show is brought to you free today by our friends at BetOnline.ag. Championship fever is running rampant in the NBA and NHL. Can you feel it? Between the finals and Major League Baseball, the sports action just keeps rolling. Get in the mix at BetOnline.ag and use the promo code PODCAST1 for your 50% welcome bonus. BetOnline.ag, your online sportsbook experts and exclusive partner of Podcast One Sportsnet.
The following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
From Hollywood, California, by way of the Broken Skull Ranch, this is the Steve Austin Show.
Give me a hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
Now, here's Steve Austin.
All right, everybody, welcome to Steve Austin Show. I am currently out on vacation, recharging batteries, but just because I'm recharging the batteries, we still got business to take care of. In the meantime, we'll be playing some of the most requested Steve Austin Show classics that have been locked away in the archives. I got a great one for you this week, and here's my producer, Sean, to tell you all about it.
Howdy, folks, and welcome to another classic episode of the Steve Austin Show. It is producer Sean with episode number 349 with The Monster Among Men, Braun Strowman, original air date August 9th, 2016. This massive competitor is in the early stages of his singles push on Raw. Around the time of this recording, Braun Strowman had just separated from the Wyatt family through the WWE draft, so he was on his own, and he was winning a lot of decisive matches along the way, and soon would go on to feud with Sami Zayn and continue an undefeated streak for quite a while, and eventually progress to where he is today in the WWE. Steve and Braun talk about strongman contests, a lot of stuff about powerlifting, a lot of discussion about that, something that Steve's very much interested in, so they do talk about lifting and the Arnold Schwarzenegger Classic, or the Arnold Classic. Also talking about his recruitment into the WWE, mentioning Mark Henry as one of the folks that was kind of like one of his mentors, learning how to work as a big man. Also talking about his road diet, which consists of a lot of Chipotle, if you can look it up. And they don't talk about it specifically here, but if you do look it up, Braun Strowman has a very specific order that he gets every time at Chipotle. And it includes fajita veggies, which actually, when I heard about that, I was inspired to start doing the same. I don't have as many calories in my Chipotle order, but figured I'd take a little bit of advice from him. Yeah, but we talk about a whole bunch of stuff here at Braun Strowman here on a classic episode on the Steve Austin Show. And before we get to this day in Steve Austin history, just a reminder that next week, Tuesday, June 18th, the Steve Austin Show returns with brand new episodes. So mark your calendars, folks. He is coming back. That's right. Stone Cold coming back with a vengeance with new audio whoop-ass. This day in Steve Austin history, today being June 11th, we start off in 1992 in Greenwood, South Carolina, with WCW World Champion Sting and Ricky the Dragon Steamboat defeating WCW US Champion Rick Rude and stunning Steve Austin. Then we go over to 1999 in Detroit, Michigan for the WWF. It's Steve Austin defeating WWF World Champion The Undertaker via disqualification. After the match, Steve Austin dished out stunners left and right to the members of the Ministry of Darkness. In 2001 in Richmond, Virginia, at a Raw is War taping, Kurt Angle defeated WWF Tag Team Champion Chris Benoit in a steel cage match. Steve Austin, who was doing guest commentary for the bout, slammed the cage door in Chris Benoit's face, allowing for Kurt Angle to escape the cage. And after the match, Steve Austin attacked the Wolverine with approximately 20 chair shots. Somebody did count these, yes. And then finally, in 2007, in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, at a Monday Night Raw taping, Steve Austin was not in attendance, but he did provide a recorded message for a various special moment in WWE history. He provided pre-taped comments for Vince McMahon Appreciation Night, where Steve said he appreciated spraying Vince down with beer, filling his car with cement, disguising himself as a doctor. Steve kind of treated this segment on Raw as a unleashed episode. Apparently there's a lot of cursing that was bleeped throughout. But of course, this is the Monday Night Raw in 2007, where Vince McMahon went outside to his limo, and the limo exploded once he got in. And that kicked off a crazy chain of events in the WWF at that time. There you go. That is this day in Steve Austin history. I got my information from the history of WWE.com. All right, coming right up after the break, we've got a classic episode with Braun Strowman on the Steve Austin Show.
June brings nothing but gold. You've got that gold and sunshine in the sky and championship gold in the NBA and NHL and over in Major League Baseball. The Twins and the Astros are standing strong in the American League, while in the National League, the Dodgers and Phillies are at the head of the pack. There's only one place that has you covered and one place we trust, BetOnline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at BetOnline.ag and use the promo code PODCAST1 or text BETNOW to 238-669 to receive a 50% welcome bonus. That's BetOnline.ag, your online sportsbook experts and exclusive partners of Podcast One Sportsnet.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
All right, I'm sitting here at the Honda Center out here in Anaheim, California. Hell, it's 11:40. I got one of the biggest, baddest, strongest cats walking planet Earth sitting right beside me. His name is Braun Strowman. He was the latest addition to the Wyatt family. Braun, let me shake your hand, you big bastard. We're going to do this family-friendly, so let's watch the four-letter words.
Yes, sir.
How are you?
I'm doing great, Steve. Thanks for having me on the show, man. You know.
Hey, so I'll tell you what. I was at the house last night, and I've been doing research. I'm talking to Pat Patterson today, and I'm going to talk to Dean Ambrose on the network. I mean, I was just perusing on YouTubes, and I started looking around because I'm always looking at strength stuff for motivation and just see what guys are doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw this big, strong cat named Adam Shear picking up all kinds of weight. That's your name, correct?
Yes, sir.
Is that how you say it?
Adam Shear is how it's
Adam
pronounced.
Shear. God dang, dude. At the time you're doing some of these interviews, you're still 6'8". At the time, you're weighing about 415, 420.
Yep. Yes, sir. About my biggest I ever weighed in was 418 when I weighed in right before the Arnold in 2012.
Dude, holy smokes. What are you weighing right now as we sit here and talk?
Right now, I'm probably walking around 375-ish, 380 probably, if I had to guess. I don't really know. My body weight fluctuates 10 to 15 pounds a day depending on what I eat.
How did you feel at 415?
Miserable. I had to have my girlfriend help me tie my shoes, and just every day-to-day life was not enjoyable, getting in and out of cars and finding clothes to fit and feeding myself. It was a job just to be that big.
Dude, that's one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you about eating on the road and your feats of strength. I don't even know where you're from. Where do you live?
I was born in Sherrills Ford, North Carolina, a little town maybe 45 minutes outside of Charlotte. Right now I live in Orlando, where I moved to start training with the WWE, the Performance Center down there. So I'm still in there. Airport's nice. I don't mind it, so I'm sticking around down there for a little bit.
Dude, that's a good place to be. I mean, we just had some big-time tragedy over there with the shooting and stuff like that. But just as far as the location with the airport, it's a great place to be based out of, especially with proximity to that training center. But before we get into the wrestling talk, let's go back a little bit to when you were a kid. Because, dude, at 6'8", you know, 375, were you a big kid from the get-go?
I graduated high school when I was 17 years old, and I was 6'5 and 305 pounds at 17.
Dude, the football coach probably had his mouth drooling. Did you play college football, high school football?
I played high school football 2 years. My first 2 years of high school, I didn't really do my grades like I should have, so they wouldn't let me play football, and that kind of led to me not playing in college. I played semi-pro ball for 4 years in North Carolina after high school and stuff like that, and I did NFL Combine in 2007 and had pretty good numbers, but with the college experience, I couldn't really get anybody NFL-wise to look at me. I had some arena offers and stuff, and just nothing that I really wanted to pursue anymore in the football.
And that's the thing for a guy that's as big as you, and obviously you understand leverage from a weightlifting standpoint, because that's a big part of the battle,
mm-hmm.
along with the strength aspect of it. But as big and strong as you are, and going back to when Brock Lesnar tried out for Minnesota, big, strong guy, but with a lack of technique, you know, other guys got the advantage.
Yep. Yeah, that's with everything, I guess, in life, even with strongman, everything, there's so many little technical things behind the scenes that people don't realize what it takes to get to that upper echelon of the athletes and stuff.
So what were you doing with your training coming up in junior high and high school? Were you already putting up stupid numbers back then?
Not really. My dad wouldn't let me lift weights till I was like 16 or 17, because this old, I guess the old wives' tale of it'll stunt your growth or this and that will hurt you and that. And I really didn't have any opportunities to do it. We had weightlifting and stuff in Phi Ed in high school, but no coaches that knew what was going on, anything like that. So kind of through high school, I tried to do the – I'd lifted and things like that. I think maybe in high school, like I'd probably bench like 300 pounds or something like that. And maybe squatted the same. Nothing crazy back then.
But you know, back in the day, I was always a big fan of the Powerlifting USA magazine. It probably has since disappeared. Of course, I was into all the muscle mags, dude. With looking at you now, I would just assume that was just consume your life from all the way back in high school. When did you decide, hey, I'm one big strong ass son of a gun, I'm gonna start taking this serious and start doing the strongman stuff?
I was working security at a nightclub in Charlotte, North Carolina, and I actually ran into a fellow strongman who's a professional strongman at the time that was working at another bar named Brad Dunn and David Hansen, actually another guy too. They kind of just saw me there and would realize that I was a big guy and everything, and they asked me what I did, and I was like, well, right now I'm kind of just doing life and, you know, just working this security thing, enjoying life and trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And they asked me if I wanted to come out and give strongman a try. And lo and behold, like a week later, I came and gave it a go, and I fell in love with it instantly, and just things kind of clicked for me. I can remember growing up not lifting weights and things like that. When it came to doing things out in nature, I guess that's where the country strong is, that what I've always called myself, that farmer strong, like when it comes just weird things. I don't know, picking up rocks and hay bales and this, I think that's what my body was built for.
Dude, what kind of skills did you have as a security guard? Because a lot of guys might be in the Krav Maga, they might know a couple of arm locks or some wrist stuff, some control things. I'm guessing you were just straight up intimidation, unless you have some skills that I don't know about.
I got a little things hidden back in the pockets here and there from previous experiences in life. But nah, my thing with security was I got into doing security because I like to go out. But the whole time that I did strongman, I never drank or anything like that, just because I was so worried about focusing on what I was going to do down the road and how if alcohol would prohibit what I want to do. So I didn't drink, but I like to go out. So I figured I might as well kill two birds with one stone. I can go out, get paid, and be out and do it. So that's what got me into the bouncing stuff. But I think, like, mainly my thing was, I guess, I don't know if it was the intimidation or the fact that I could talk most people out of doing something silly.
Well, that was one of the things I wanted to talk to you about, because I see it was probably at the, it might have been Arnold, I think it was when you tweaked your arm, you were talking about the six-pack backpack that you carry all your meals in.
Yep.
And I said, man, this guy can talk, this is a silver-tongued devil. So you can talk your way out of a lot of situations, which maybe not everybody, and you know, no offense, but I didn't expect that out of you.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are, it throws people off a little bit when they hear me speak, because especially like with my TV character with Braun Strowman and things like that, I'm don't really say too much. It's more action, less talking. And in life, I'm kind of the same way. I go about keeping myself, for the most part, pick and choose who I open up to and who I want to speak to. But if I get talking, it's hard to shut me up.
And that's good, because we're doing a podcast. Your diet. You were talking to that young lady at the expo. It might have been Arnold. And I'm trying to imagine, because I'm sitting there trying to get back in shape from my rotator cuff injury. You're sitting there at like a brick house at 375. Is there anything specifically that you have to eat? Because now that you've left the world of strongman and you are a WWE superstar and you know how tough this life is now,
yes,
how
sir.
Long have you been on the road?
Coming up here, it's the Monday Night Raw after SummerSlam is when I debuted last year. So we're coming up on a year right now in the next, 2 weeks?
Okay.
Yeah.
So what are you eating on the road to maintain 375?
I eat a lot of Chipotle. That's my guilty pleasure when it comes to food, because I guess they advertise they're organic and the price ain't bad for how much that I got to eat. So it usually works out. I usually hit them 3, 4, 5 times a week when I'm out doing that. And then it gets tough. I mean, you know, at late at night, there ain't a whole lot of options. So, I mean, it's load up on, usually when I land in a town, first place I go is like a vitamin shop and go straight load up on protein bars and little cookies and snack, things like that. So I don't have to be a fat pig and eat whatever at the gas station at 2 o'clock in the morning while I'm making towns.
Do you have to worry about, what kind of food you're taking in? Because obviously you have great genetics, but I mean, if you ate garbage, would you get fat?
Yeah. I try more so now, because I don't burn as many calories working out as much anymore, because I don't go as crazy. Now my normal gym's about an hour and a half, and that's doing 20 minutes of cardio in there.
Go back to the start of the strongman days when you started training with that guy. What did you focus on? I mean, were you doing heavy deadlifts, squats, and bench? Because I know those are power lifts, but did you use those along with everything else that the strongmen do?
Yeah.
Like, what were your totals? What were numbers you were throwing up?
Well, we focused on on a lot of the three lifts, but instead of more of like the bench presence aspect, I think it was more of the clean and press overhead, because within strongman, there's no bench press events anymore, at least exactly. That I know of. But yeah.
But those are just kind of staples that guys kind of use as a benchmark. You might not be a powerlifter, but yeah, how much you bench is always kind of in the equation.
Yeah, the most I ever did was 585 in training.
Was that raw?
That was raw.
That much damn good lift.
And then I never really did a lot of I like doing a lot of close grip stuff. I remember one time a good friend of mine, I don't know if you know Mark Bell, he makes that slingshot.
He was just he's on my podcast next Thursday. Yeah, I love the slingshot.
Yeah. Oh, me too. That's what I said, to save my elbows and stuff like that. The best I ever did with one of those, I did 525 for 7 on close grip bench press with a slingshot on.
Dude, that's what I like about that thing, because I'll get my heavy reps in before I mess up my rotator cuff. I'll now throw on that slingshot and put something on there. I'm always training by myself down at the ranch, so man, it's something that it will help me get a few extra reps in. If you're wondering what we're talking about, go to howmuchyoubench.com or supertraining.tv, and you can check out the slingshot. It's an invention by Mark Bell. Have you ever worn a bench shirt?
I tried one on one time, and I couldn't get 500 pounds to touch my chest in it.
Dude, I think that'd have been so tight. It would take like 10 guys to put them on.
Oh, yeah, it was crazy. I took it off. I looked like a tiger with just bruises all over me, striped bruises.
But that's what I like about the slingshot, because it just gives you a little bit of assistance. These days, I just think sometimes things are over-equipped, and so it seems like in talking with Mark Bell, he's going for a new bench press PR, and he's going to do it raw. And so raw is coming back in vogue, and I like to see that, because for a while, the bench shirts were so thick, it's like, man, it's adding a couple of hundred pounds to the lift, so mm-hmm. Really, what is the lift?
Yeah.
So talk to me about the strongman stuff. Is it the Atlas Stones? What kind of training protocol were you in on a day-in, day-out basis? Because a lot of the stuff I saw you doing, you're pushing prowlers, you're doing Viking presses and stuff like that, but I mean, what about the poles and all the other stuff?
A lot of the stuff, when I got to a contest, it was the first time I ever got to put my hands on it. So like where I grew up, like, I would to train events like Atlas Stone and stuff like that for the first year that I got into strongman, I had to drive 2 hours one way just to get in, and I would only train events one day a week. It'd be on my Sundays, and that's also on top of I worked a regular job. I worked 60 hours a week, and then I worked 3 nights a week doing security, and then would get up and go down there to train. You know, when you're chasing the dream, you don't let nothing get in your way.
So how long did you do the strongman? Because I know WWE came calling.
My first contest was in September of 2009. I trained maybe like 4 weeks for it, and I won my first contest. It was the Beast of the East Nationals qualifier in South Carolina. And like, I'll never forget, like, being out there and not knowing what I was really getting myself into and seeing these guys that I got to compete against. And it opened my eyes, because I thought I was a strong guy. And once I got into competing this and started meeting these athletes from all around the country, then the guys from all around the world, man, it's insane the human beings that walk this earth out there. And just to where I started, and I think I still am, I'm not sure if I am or not, I'm the fastest American to ever start strongman and turn pro. And I started in September of 2009, and I got my pro card in November of 2011.
And that's the question. What does it take to get a pro card in strongman?
Usually they have a nationals event every year, which is North America's Strongest Man. And then I think they have 3 or 4 other opportunities a year. So there's only maybe 4 or 5 spots a year for guys to step up into that next level. And that's what I mean. Strongman opened up so many doors for me. Got to travel around the country on my own dime for 2 years doing all this, just a guy with a dream. I qualified for nationals 2011, and like I knew, like, going into this is gonna be tough, because the competition, there was a lot of really, really good guys and stuff. A late great friend of mine, Mike Jenkins and stuff, like just guys that were the next level, the future stars, the new Magnus Vermagnusens, the Marius Pujanowskis, guys that are gonna go on to be etched in stone for the rest of their lives for what they do. So just, yeah, big revolving door of everything I'm saying, man. It just, I won nationals 2011. It gave me the opportunity to compete at the Arnold Amateur World Championships in 2012, where I represented the United States against, I think it was 52 other athletes from 19 different countries. And we had 7 events. I won 5 of the 7 events at the Arnold that year, because I came in fired up, ready to go for that one.
Tell me about the nerves going into a strongman competition, because here in a minute, I'm going to shift gears and we're going to talk about wrestling, because that's a whole different crowd. And some of the stuff that I watched you do, do. I think it was Atlas Stone. Y'all were just dropping them over a certain level of height, however many stones you drop, or was your tally, four time. And, dude, the other guy starts to have a little bit of a hard time with respect to him. Well, you start hamming it up, working the crowd. Are you nervous before a strongman contest to get back and make it a simple question?
Yeah. At first, I was really nervous because I had flaws in my game and things that I knew I was going to be weak at, and that they would always make me nervous because I knew I had to make it up somewhere else. And then as I got further along, more educated in the sport, and then I obviously became stronger in it, I started honing out those weaknesses. And it's kind of just sitting in the back, headphones in, just some kind of a good tune in the head, and just trying to stay calm as long as possible as you can to keep all that basically adrenaline and everything bottled up. And then when it's time to hit your lift, you flip that switch and you go out there and you just let it out.
I'm a music guy, so what kind of music would you do to keep you calm but get you in the state of mind you needed to be?
Sometimes I would do classical stuff, sit and listen to Mozart, not always even music necessarily. I'm a huge Vince Lombardi fan, so I would listen to his speeches and stuff like that. And I mean, I'm giving myself goosebumps right now thinking about just different things. Probably go-to's Metallica. I mean, just Metallica, Korn, Marilyn Manson, just the heavy stuff right before I go. That's when I'm hitting that switch with something heavier. And then, I don't know, the classic Skinner and Zeppelin and just things that I grew up listening to that puts me in a happy place and just lets me relax.
What does it take to be a good strongman? Obviously, you have to be genetically inclined. Mm-hmm. If you don't have the gifts, if you don't have the leverage, you can do it. You can participate, but you're probably not going to succeed. On an intellectual level, how paramount is the training to train smart with the guys that you learn from, as like a power lifter would follow a specific cycle for the three lifts, mm-hmm. for the total? Like, what is the scientific approach, or is there, to the strongman games?
See, with the strongman games, usually they would have given us, it depends what the contest, who promoters are. They give us a few weeks notice of what the events are going to be so we can hone it up. Otherwise, it's year-round training 20 or 30 different events all the time because you don't know what they're going to throw at you. Some contest, like my first big international contest, I went to Poland to represent the United States and got there and had no idea what any of the events were, what the weights on anything was, the language barriers there, trying to communicate, figure out what's going on. So it's just that kind of just being good at everything. I mean, I don't really know, like, when it came to, I didn't have to train as much on like the moving event stuff. That came really natural to me, talking to that farmer country strong. When it came to like grip strength and just moving around yoke walks on my back, that all came real natural to me. The struggle for me, and I think being because I'm 6'8", was all the overhead press and stuff I've got, where like guys that are 6 foot tall, I got to move it 6-8 inches further than those guys do every lift. So,
dude, here's a wrestling question. We're going to go right back into the strongman stuff. 6'8", 375 right now. Here's the thing. When you work for this company, Vince McMahon, it's very hard to get first class. Usually you do it when you're a top guy, and then kind of when you get it, you're tenured. You always have it. You're 6'8", 375. I'm repeating one more time just because of, you've got to imagine how big this guy is when he's standing next to you or sitting next to you. Do you fly first class? Is your big ass flying coach?
I'm in coach. I don't have any clout yet. I'm hoping to get there.
Do they buy you two seats in coach?
No.
Dude, you hear the thing, man, and that first of all is torture on you. I think it's hard on the person sitting next to you.
Yeah, I definitely, sometimes I feel bad. A lot. Flying into L.A. yesterday from Orlando, I got lucky. There was a girl that maybe was 5'1 and 90 pounds sitting beside me, so she kind of just scooted over to the other side of her seat, and we both got along comfortably.
Back in the day, dude, I'd get on a flight, and I'd be back here, you know, whatever, and I could spot, you know, there'd be like the, like you said, the 5'1 chick that weighed about like 900 pounds, and that would be great. But then there's always some big dude that was like 350, and he wasn't really in good shape. And yeah. I guarantee you, my luck of the draw, he's going to be sitting right next to me in the aisle, and I was right 95% of the time. And as soon as they sit down, I would bust on him. I said, dude, I was hoping for the 5'1 chick.
Yeah, that's me holding my breath, fingers crossed, like, who's coming? And I'm sure everyone feels the same way when I come walking on the plane. They're like, oh, God, please don't sit next
please
to me.
Please don't let that guy be sitting next to me.
Yeah.
One time I was on a plane with Dusty Rhodes, the late, great one and only
rest
Dusty Rhodes. A national treasure. And Dusty was kind of just, you know, in my seat as well. I was about 250 at the time, and I finally looked over at Dusty, who I loved and respected. I said, "Dusty, could you please stay in your own seat? This seat's for me." We got a good laugh about that. Back to the strongman stuff. I'm not asking for number figures. Can you make a living being a professional strongman, traveling all over the world? I know this can come from sponsorships.
Yeah.
Primarily, because I don't imagine the winnings are a whole lot.
Yeah. A few of the contests, the money's pretty decent. At Arnold Classic, I believe it might be up to close to $100,000 now for the Arnold. But you're talking, one, the chances just getting invited. They'll invite 10 guys from the entire world to it. And then two, it's the 10 strongest human beings on the face of the earth. I mean, I competed once at the Arnold Pro and tore my bicep on the first event. It's just, it's a gruel. At that level, Dr. Terry Todd, who puts on the Arnold Classic, he wants to see what the human body is capable of. And every year, everything, the bar's raised. The guys keep meeting the bar and pushing it up higher and higher and higher. And it's crazy to see where the sport's come from where I started to where it is now. Like when I started the sport doing a 400-pound log cleaning press overhead, well, heck, there was only three guys in the world going to do it. Well, now that's, if you can't do 400 pounds, you're taking a stick to a gunfight.
Right.
So it's just, I mean, but that's the evolution of all sports. I mean, football, basketball, baseball, everything's bigger, faster, stronger.
As we speak now, what are you, 31 years old?
32.
You're 32 years old, so man, you're still a pup. You got plenty of miles in you. How much wear and tear did the strongman stuff take on your body?
It definitely took a toll on me. Collapsed arch, my right foot, torn bicep. I'm sure it had to help do with the back surgery that I had to have, a year and a half ago.
What did you have done?
I had lumbar? A micro discectomy on my L5-S1. It was pinched off my sciatic nerve, paralyzed my left leg. Had to WWE, man, great company, last minute rush, emergency flew me out to Pittsburgh to see Dr. Maroon. Had emergency surgery on me. He said like 5 o'clock Saturday morning. Woke up an hour and a half after surgery and could walk. Got pushed into the hospital in a wheelchair.
Dude, where you get most of your clothes?
A lot of my clothes, a good friend of mine has a clothing company, Silverback Crew, and he was a sponsor of mine when I did Strongman. We got to be really good friends, and he still sends me clothes because, I mean, he specifies in making stuff for bigger people. So a lot of that. I don't know if you know Rob Bailey. He's a good friend of mine, owns Flagner Fail Clothing.
Yeah, yeah. His wife is Danielyn Brooks.
Danielyn Bailey, yeah.
Danielyn Bailey, yeah.
Yeah, one of the top.
Oh, yeah, she's badass.
Oh, yeah. Unbelievable. Yeah, top physique women in the world.
Yeah.
And yeah,
she grinds it out. I mean, boy, she goes to the gym. She goes to the gym.
She would bury me in the gym. It's crazy.
That little girl is a tank. I've watched a lot of her training videos. She's awesome.
Yeah.
So y'all are hooked up. What do you say? You got a girlfriend?
Yeah.
Okay, so dude, what's home life like for you? 6'8", your weight. Eating. I mean, is she cooking all the time? Y'all eat out all the time? Because this is, dude, you know the schedule. You're down in Orlando when you're home, but you're out on the road, and so you're doing the Chipotle, whatever thing, probably Waffle House, IHOP, Denny's, try to eat clean, and you can eat clean at those places.
Yeah.
And that being said, I was talking to someone about eating clean the other day. Dude, if you got to roll through Burger King or Wendy's or McDonald's, whatever, and just eat the meat and throw away everything else, I mean, you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah.
But you're at home, so what are y'all eating at the crib, and is she cooking all this food for you? Because can you estimate – people get mad at me for making these long questions. Can you estimate how many calories a day you eat?
I used to try and keep track of it. It's not as much as it used to be. Like, I had a nutritionist when I did Strongman, and my goal was 1,050 grams of protein a day, 1,000 grams of carbohydrates, and we're talking –
that's 8,000 calories right there.
Yeah, that's what I said. We were talking 13,000 calories with the fats and everything.
God dang. But that makes sense, too. What would you figure you're at right now? Ballpark guess.
If I had to guess right now, I'd probably still say I'd do between 5 and 7.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Is she cooking all the time or
no,
you cook?
It's terrible to admit, but I haven't turned my stove on since I went on the road.
Nothing wrong with that, brother. That's called an improvising, overcoming, and adapting and learning.
Last thing I want to do when I get home is go to the grocery store, cook, do dishes, this and that. And by the time, for what it takes for me to eat and have a meal, by the time I go buy it, cook it, everything, I can pay somebody to do it for the same price, and I don't have to do the dishes.
Amen, and use it as a write-off, right?
Yeah.
Okay, save your money, kid, and use your receipts. Before we start talking about a little bit of wrestling, before I take a break here, I want to ask you a question because I was on YouTube and I saw a trailer, a teaser for a movie. The name of the movie escapes me. Smarten me up about this.
Oh, that's actually, I did that right after I won the Arnold Amateur. The movie's called Three Count. And what's so ironic about it to me is that it's a movie about two brothers aspiring to be professional wrestlers. And this is before I had any idea that I was ever going to get involved in this company. So it's kind of ironic to me that I played a good guy, kind of bad guy-ish in that movie that was about wrestling. And lo and behold, 4 years later, here I am doing Stone Cold's podcast backstage at the Honda Center in Anaheim.
Okay, now whose idea was the movie? Do you have aspirations of getting in front of, you know, on the silver screen or on television?
Yeah.
Other than wrestling?
I love the wrestling, the aspect of walking out in the place going nuts. I mean, it's a special feeling. I mean, I've done a lot of things in this life that I've lived so far, but man, walking out, especially being part of the Wyatt family, like coming out at WrestleMania and 100,000 plus people with their lights on their phone, it was breathtaking. And that's one of those moments I was glad that I got to wear a mask, because I'm just marking out, walking out there like a 6-year-old, just going, wow, these people are here to see us.
Yeah.
And it's just special.
Alexa isn't the only one with breaking news. Make sure to hang around at the end of this podcast for the latest breaking headlines on the AP News Minute.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun. And that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Attention, true crime fans, check out 22 Hours, an American Nightmare on Podcast One. It was a case nightmares are made of. A family is held hostage for another 24 hours and murdered inside their own home. WTOP examines the complicated trail of evidence that police say led to finding their killer and why they say he committed such a brutal crime. Download new episodes of 22 Hours, an American Nightmare on Apple Podcasts, Podcast One. Like what you hear? Tell your friends and leave a rating and review.
This is the Steve Austin Show.
Mark Henry is your connection. He puts you in touch, or WWE in touch with you. How do the talks go? How long of a process is this before they say, hey, we think you'd be a good fit for us and vice versa?
So I met Canyon Seaman September of 2011. I was at World's Strongest Man, actually right up the road from here, at the Commerce Casino in Los Angeles here. And it was pretty short and sweet. It wasn't. It was basically, hi, I'm Canyon. I'm a recruiter for WWE. You know Mark, blah, 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 blah. Here's my card if you'd ever be interested in giving me a call. And I was like, okay, thank you. And I went about, I was an alternate that year, so I basically was out there. They had me testing all the events, doing everything, and making sure that everything was going to run right. So I knew I was going to compete in Arnold in 2013. So I got in contact with Canyon and said, yeah, hey, I'm definitely interested. I want to do one more strongman contest and whatnot. So I met them in September. They brought me down December of 2012 to the FCW arena, I guess it would be, where developmental wasn't for a while in Tampa, and went down and had me run the ropes and just move around and cut a promo and just kind of feel me out and see what I had to offer, I guess, in a couple of days period. Well, lo and behold, I guess they liked what they saw, because they signed me, I signed May of 2013, so I did the Arnold Classic and then had a couple months off and then signed. moved to Orlando July 4th, 2013, and started July 7th.
So what was your feelings rolling in there? I mean, you're in the world-class level of strongman, and now you're in a developmental system of WWE. Obviously, when you walk in, you're going to turn heads. How did you feel? Were you confident? Were you nervous? I mean, because this is a big gamble, and this is not near. I don't know how it looks to people at home if they think it's easy, but it's anything but, in my opinion.
Totally agree.
How did you feel? What was your confidence level?
I walked in very confident when knowing that I had a lot to offer and that I knew that there's not a lot of people built like me, personality like me, everything like me. So I walked in with that, but man, I tell you what, it didn't take long to have second thoughts, man. There was days going in and it's like, because they want to make sure you want it and you're going to earn it. They ain't giving you nothing here. And I'm more than happy with that, because everything I've had in my life, I ain't ever had nothing given to me. I've busted my ass for everything that I've got in this life. So it's just another thing. And I knew that coming in, I'm starting from the bottom. I wrestled in high school, but other than that, I have zero sports entertainment background in me other than hamming it up here and there on a strongman stage.
Now, how did you do in wrestling, amateur?
My junior year in high school was my last year I wrestled. I was 23 and like 7, and then got hurt in regionals. My senior year, I didn't wrestle because that fixing my grade situation that I didn't like to do for a while. I had to go to night school, and that happened during wrestling season.
But I'm imagining you were more of a strength guy and being able to overpower your opponent than so much a technique guy. With respect that you have technique, but I wouldn't say that, I'm guessing it wasn't your specialty.
Not so, it got a little bit. I started learning more and more. Luckily, I went to a high school that had a great wrestling program. We're a small high school out in the middle of nowhere. Bandy's High School in North Carolina literally is surrounded in cow pastures. I think there are big biggest thing is the FFA out there. We had a good wrestling program for a small school, and I had a good group of my buddies. They're all brothers, four brothers, the McIntosh brothers, that moved down from upstate New York, and all of them were like four-time state champs, all Americans in college. So, and I hung out with them all the time, and they're all a lot smaller than me, but I had to stay on my toes with these guys, because we'd be walking in the mall and they'd try and shoot a double leg on you and take you down in the middle of the mall. So I picked up a little quicker, I think, than I normally would have in the wrestling, just being around those, because you never know what kind of shenanigans these guys are going to try and pull on you.
Now, here's the thing, man. And when you go down to the performance center, and I've been wanting to get down there for a long time, I haven't made it down there, but I can imagine that all the trainers are down there. They're usually training most of the guys with the same skill set, because by and large, everybody's going to, it's like going to a college and getting a business degree. It's the same curriculum for everybody. But I'm thinking with your body size, your type, you know, you have the amateur wrestling background, but I don't expect you to go out there and grab a whole lot of headlocks, spin around to a hammer lock, and be a scientific wrestler. So my question to you is, how did they direct your training, whereas they would direct, a lot of the guys that are coming out of the amateur ranks, but other people that are going to learn how to be a regular wrestler? I don't think that falls into what you're going to be doing. You're to me, a brawler. A wrestling move every now and then could be cool or neat, but dude, I expect you to just go out there and crush people. Now here's a question. How did they tailor your training to work for you?
Well, starting out, didn't really. Everyone did the exact same stuff. They taught us to bump, to run the ropes, to roll. I mean, I was doing squats, standing on the top rope to work on footwork and just everything. A lot of stuff that, in the back of my mind, I thought to myself, why am I doing this? But then again, down the road now, I see a lot of, because now with all the bumping that I did and the rolls and a lot of things that I thought was monotonous that I did over and over and over, it formed a callus that now that I just do these things automatically and I don't have to think about it.
What did you think about running those ropes? You dig it? A lot of people hate them, and your ribs will be sore for the first few days. You might be bruised up. It's just part of the process. I loved it. I just love ricocheting off those damn ropes. It was my thing. Did it rub you the wrong way? Was it?
I like running the ropes. I mean, it didn't take long. I'd always wear a raw spot on the top of my hind end, but I like running the ropes. The drop downs and things like that were the things that every day I knew we were having a drop down drill, and it's just, oh God.
And those drop downs, it's like a burpee.
Yeah.
They will blow your ass up.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times if I was injured coming back for something, I'd go in the ring, just show up at a TV taping or whatever, run the ropes, just do a drop down, get up, keep hitting the ropes, and, you know, stomps in the corner of a turnbuckle, build my gas tank back up. How did you like the mat when they started teaching you a bump? I was hosted 2011 version of Tough Enough, and there were some kids in there, Miss USA in particular, who was allergic to the mat. How did that feel on a big body of yours that you beat up in a strongman contest?
I tell you, I remember after the first week of practice, I remember waking up like a Saturday morning, hat off, and I like got out of bed, and I felt like I was 90 years old, like my all hunched over, everything hurt. I've sounded like Rice Krispies when you pour milk on them when I get out of bed. Everything's just snap, crackling, and popping. And then that's one of those moments where I'm like going to myself, what the hell have I got myself into? And I had to take a step back and go, man, like, you know, sometimes I don't know, is this worth it? But then you pop a couple ibuprofens and have a cold one or something like that, and it makes you rethink, like, you know, I don't think anything, in my opinion, I don't think anything that's easy to attain in life is worth having. Anybody can have something given to them, and I don't see any satisfaction or gratitude, self-worth of somebody just, here's a plate, eat it. I'm more of like, get out there, grind, do my thing. If I don't make it, it's my fault.
So when you came in, you start going through the process. How long were you there before they said, hey, you know what? You're going to be the newest member of the Wyatt family.
Actually, for a long time, there was talk that it wasn't going to happen. When I first got to talking about being brought up to the main roster, it wasn't going to be at all. They were talking about cutting my hair, my beard, giving me a different look, going with something else. And then the powers that be decided that that's not what they wanted. They wanted me to be with the Wyatt family. And I tell you what, like, The little experience that I have had coming up and wrestling and getting and then being put in with a group of guys like that, that to hide some of my weaknesses while I hone my skills, I couldn't have been in a better spot. I mean, three of the greatest human beings that I've ever met just to be around outside of the business. Then as far as in the ring, like, Luke Harper's one of the best working big mans I've
Absolutely.
Ever seen. Rowan's the same way. Like, he's come, now that Harper's been hurt for a while, Rowan stepped up into Harper's position. Man, we're working on the house shows and things, and he's the one flying around and bumping and doing all this crazy stuff, and then, like, walking out with Bray and just even him mesmerizing me, and I'm in the ring knowing what's going on and just listening to him talk, and it's just like, I was very, very blessed to be put into that spot, and I think it really helped me. Like, I don't know, you know, what would have happened if I would have been brought in doing something else. Who knows? Because, you know, with this business, it's fly by the seat of your pants. You either get over or you don't.
I like all the aspects of the Wyatt family, and I could see a baby face run out of those guys. And Bray, I mean, his promos, the way his mind works with that voice that he's got, he's just an entrancing storyteller, and just ropes you in with the cadence, the rhythm, and that drawl. You get lumped in with those guys, and like you said, you're going out there, you're part of a team, a faction, whatever you want to call it, but they were able to, you know, protect you. You go out there and do the things you do. Your first few nights, you go out there and everybody throws the iPhones or whatever up.
Mm-hmm.
Was that a mark-out moment?
That's what I said. It's just... That the Fireflies is something special. I mean, it's taken over the world of everything. Like, the Fireflies are Bray Wyatt's thing. Now you look at concerts, football games, basketball games, baseball games, the Fireflies are there. And like, to think about that, I was part of the original reason why this season even exists, because I don't know of any time they'd ever done that before they started doing it. That was the London crowd and the crazy things that they like to do, and then all of a sudden things stick, and now you walk out, like we were talking a minute ago, walk out 273 at WrestleMania with their flashlights going on their phones. It's Yeah.
So you got Bray Wyatt, who's leading that. You've got Eric Rowan, who I think is a really good hand. They need to do something with him. Luke Harper, I didn't know he was injured. What's wrong with him?
I think he tore his MCL and ACL.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I wish him all the best in healing up. That's a damn good hand, like you said today. And I like his work as well. When they said, okay, here's going to be the new guy. His name is going to be Braun Strowman. How did they take you in? Was it like, we don't need another guy? Or, man, this guy's green as hell. We'll put him somewhere else. Did they embrace you? How did that process work?
Bray and I have had a special connection, I think, ever since we met. He's kind of wanted me since the first time they saw me. Because him and I In real life, it's almost scary how much we are alike. He calls me Evil Wyndham, like I'm pretty much do all the stuff that he doesn't do, which is nothing really. But he's wanted me since day one, and he was ecstatic, I think, when they found out that, here, we're going to give you this guy. And I know you've been wanting him, and let's see what happens.
How have your mechanics progressed since you've got into the squared circle from day one until now? Do you feel comfortable being in the ring? How are the nerves? What are you thinking before a match? In a strong man, it's a little bit different because it's an explosion. In a match, you know, whether you're just beating the guy down or you're telling a story because you're trying to get over. Mm-hmm. So how comfortable are you in the ring now versus when they first put you in a group?
I'll never forget for the rest of my life that first night at the Barclays Center, the Raw after SummerSlam. I was underneath the ring getting ready to do my debut, and I was under there for like a half an hour, and I'm freaking out. And I don't usually get worked up over things. I'm pretty good about keeping a level head about everything. And man, I'm just worst case scenario. Everything's going through my head. I'm going to trip going over the top rope, getting in. I'm going to do something stupid. I'm going to do this blah, 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 blah. This is my one chance. It's like, you either do it right or you go home. And I don't know. I guess I thought like that and was nervous. But then I think when it came time, they hit the horror graphic lights out, and I feel like I flipped that switch almost like I did in Strongman. I just went out there and just did what I knew I was going to do, and I think it came off pretty well.
What is your take on a match? Because I would lead this, and by what I mean is it's an athletic endeavor. It's a contest. It's, you know, it's damn near a shoot, but it happens to be a work. Mm. So it should look like a football game. It should look like a wrestling match, you know. A contest. Mm-hmm. So where are you at with respect to psychology? You know, going about the process, you know, you're going to overpower a lot of guys, but therein you've got to make that guy and put on a match. How are you with your psychology? Are you 101? Are you 201? Are you at the Shawn Michaels, Nature Boy, Ric Flair, Bret Hart 301 level? Or?
Yeah, no, I don't know if I'll ever get to that level. Still at the 101, still just learn everything. I've been very grateful the last, like, 3 months that I've been in a program on the live events. Me and Eric Rowan have been working Kane and Big Show on the live events. So just going out there with those guys, and, you know, they've done everything there is to do. I mean, both the guys have been in the business 20 years. They've won every title there is to win. They've done it all. And just having the opportunity to go out with two greats like that with so much knowledge and just listening to them and the psychology of telling a story.
Well, and the fact that also what makes it easy for you, and Eric can go himself, but with respect to Big Show and Kane, yeah, I mean, you're talking about shoot together. They have what, probably close to 40 years experience. And those are two guys that are big enough that you could actually do something with, take a bump for, get slammed by because of who they are, one, and how big and strong they are, too. So it frees you up because if both those guys were 6 foot 2'10", you, even though they were 20-year vets each, it'd be a little bit different of what you're giving and taking. Mm-hmm. So working with two big guys does help you come along.
Yeah. It did. Well, I always keep in the back of my mind what the head coach of the WWE Performance Center, Matt Bloom, told me. I'm willing to bump for anyone, but we're going to tell a story to get to it. I don't want to go out there and just be some guy that's just flopping around, flying around like a 185-pound guy. I like to think that I can tell a story of someone smaller trying to overcome, he's getting closer, oh man, he can't do it, holy cow, he knocked him down, what just happened, he knocked him down, Braun Strowman doesn't go down. So yeah, working with that, like I've had some opportunities to work with Roman and Dean and guys like that are the top guys and that aren't necessarily quite my size, so yeah, working on that. And but then again, it's just lucky for me to be put in a position with guys like that, because I mean, they've done it all already, you know what I mean? Maybe not so much as all, but both guys are very well established, over can work, and just going out there and telling them what I do well, what they do well, and then finding a way to put it together.
You used to walk out with the rest of the pack, which was the Wyatt family. Now you're walking out by yourself. How is that? I mean, is there insecurity there? Because now you've got to find your own way. Now there's not, you know, one, two, or three members with you to pick up the other pieces of the match. It was like the Shield when they split those guys up. Mm-hmm. They had to pick it up by themselves. Here you are by yourself. How's your confidence?
I'm pretty confident. I feel comfortable that when they're ready to call me for something big, I'll be able to produce.
You're ready to produce. Here's a tidbit of information I gained. I was reading a book about Pat Patterson, one of the greatest minds in the history of the business, and he was talking about working for a promoter named Roy Shire over in San Francisco many years ago. And Shire's big thing, he would watch every match, and he would yell at everybody after every match because he was all about psychology. And he would go on to quote, Ray is saying, you know, like, he didn't care about your moveset. He didn't care that you did anything spectacular, or if you could do something spectacular, what he cared about was that it meant something. So don't get caught up in a game. If I could give you a tip or a pointer, don't get caught up in the mindset that, hey, man, this would be cool for the crowd to see a dude that's 6'8", 375, get clotheslined and turn a flip because the guy hit me so hard. I don't care who you're working with. If it was a guy twice your size, it just those it should be logical.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about what motivates you. Are they just letting the crowd dictate who and what you are? Are you working baby? Are you working heel?
Right now, they didn't give me a direction of what they want. Right now, they basically told me to go out there and be a monster. So,
get over.
Yeah. So I guess it's just going to be to what the crowd, if they – one day they love seeing me kill somebody, and the next day they hate it. So,
if you had a preference, I mean, do you have any lean any way to heel or baby?
I like being a heel because I like to think in real life I'm more of a baby face in real life. I'm pretty fun to be around. I like to have fun. So when I get to go out there and be something that I'm really not, I think it's kind of cool because that's more, I feel like that's more of a challenge because anybody can like play their self, I think. To go out there and be something that you're not and do it believably to where like, I've like literally like seen children cry when be walking by them by the ringside and stuff like that. So
just because they were scared.
Yeah.
Well, and here's the thing that to go down the road that you're going as a heel, it was always my opinion that you have more creative freedom to do anything you want. As a babyface, you have to have a certain quality. I mean, you never want any egg on your face, so to speak. But as a heel, say as big as you are, 6'8", 375, you don't make a habit of this. But if you trip going through the ropes, hey, you're a heel at the end of the day, and it just means you're going to beat the living hell out of the guy because now you're really pissed. He's pissed before you got in the ring, but now you're really pissed. So to me, if you're working heel, it'll give you even more time as a single to build up your confidence level, build up your comfort level, build up your repertoire, and keep feeling the work, keep feeling the crowd. When I worked, and I would go on to have my greatest run as a baby, but I always loved being a heel because of the things you just mentioned. I'm a pretty nice guy. I love being the heel, but just because I love being a shy kid growing up, I just love to be the bad guy.
Yeah.
And so that would teach me, you know, ultimately how to be the greatest good guy. And, you know, I don't blow smoke up my ass, but I was a pretty good guy.
Yeah, you're pretty good.
But, but man, I tell you what, when you go out there and you can do anything you want, the point I'm getting to, to me, tip. As a heel, you have to have a mean streak.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't expect you to have as many gears as Shawn Michaels had, but you have to have an extra gear. You have to have an explosion gear. You have to have a hammer gear. I mean, you have to be able to grind through somebody, use your strength. But when it comes time to get mean and just open up a can, I call that a mean streak.
Yeah.
And I believe in my heart that every heel has to have a mean streak. When it comes time to get the heat, I mean, it's on.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
As a baby face, on the other hand, it's almost the same, but it's spun in a different direction because it's a 180, but it's fire. So you have, to me, as a baby face, you have to have fire, or you want your baby face to have fire, because when he does try to come back on your big ass, he better have a truckload of it, or he's not going to be successful, because your mean streak is just going to quell him down. You're going to grab him by the throat, whatever your finish is, and put him down. So fire is a baby face, mean streak right now. What are you using for a finish?
Right now, I've been trying to get over a reverse choke slam, and it seemed to have been the crowd makes that gasp of, oh, God, he just killed him when he hit him with it. So I've done that. I've got the choke. I haven't done it in a while. A couple other things that I got stashed away that people will be seeing more of soon. Can't tell them everything.
Well, looking at your Wikipedia here, the lifting arm triangle choke, is that what you're referring to?
Yep.
The choke slam, the reverse choke slam. What's the Yokosuka cutter?
I'm trying to think. Billy Gunn actually taught me that one. It's kind of load a guy up like a power bomb, but it's, you catch him on one shoulder on his back, facing up, and you kind of flip him and sit out at the same time with him.
Okay, you've got a bill throw, a big boot, a clothesline, a running shoulder block, spine buster, body avalanche. That's a hell of an avalanche. A scoop slam. You better have a scoop slam, a suplex. Release spine buster, elbow drop, corner foot choke, shoulder claw. Got to have a hold, back body drop, European uppercut. There's so many people using those European uppercuts. If I see you throwing an uppercut, I expect that guy to fly over the top rope, Ron. A gorilla press slam, you better have one. You're pushing 400 pounds of that damn log over your head in Oklahoma Stampede. That's a natural. See, look, your signature moves, if you would look me up, there'd be two signature moves, a right hand and a stunner. So you've got a better move set than me right now. In this business right now, who do you look to for advice? Because you're a big guy. There's not a whole lot of big guys here other than Kane and Show. But other than that, what are your sources of information to help you learn more?
I can't put over the fact like how much of a factor Bray has been in my career. It was kind of almost heartbreaking that they split us up because we ride together, we room together, we eat together, we lift together. Make towns, and he talks about wrestling, tells me about what I did that night that looked good, what sucked, what I need to throw away, what I need to keep, and then gives me matches to watch and pick through this and look what you think about this, and then here, oh man, I saw a new idea for a move for you. So like I said, I can't put over the fact about how good of a brother Bray Wyatt is.
You ever go back and just for the hell of it, watch some old Stan Hansen in Japan, Brody in Japan, or Brody in the States, and you're a bigger guy than that, but just the way they project and work as a big man?
I watched, just recently, I watched Snuka versus Brody. I think it was like 84 or 5, I believe. Not sure. It was an old one. But yeah, in Japan, and it was just, that's the one where Snook, I think it's the one where he did like the dive out of the ring. It was like one of the first times, and people were just going crazy because they're like, what is going on? Like throwing drop kicks and just stuff that's unheard of back in the day like that. So, and you had to watch Bruiser Brody's mentality of how he works through the ring, that slow methodical, then the quick burst of everything. And that's what a lot, and Undertaker, same way, like that slow methodical, but then when it's time to get it, it gets it. And that's what I'm trying to base a lot of my character off of, is that slow methodical. I don't want to be a big lump giant.
All right, let's give big ups to Geico for being a loyal sponsor of the Steve Austin Show. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you can be saving 15% or more on car insurance. That's right. Save hundreds of dollars on car insurance at geico.com. Extra money in your pocket? It may just be the most rewarding thing you do today. All right, I'm giving Sean a go-home cue, so let's wrap it up for this week. Make sure you check out podcast1.com and subscribe to the Steve Austin Show so you don't miss any of these classic episodes. Before I ride off in the sunset, I do want to throw out a couple of plugs. I still got a beer. It's the badass Broken Skull IPA, the finest IPA in the United States of America, and that's the bottom line. Made by El Segundo Brewing Company. You can find Broken Skull IPA at Whole Foods and Total Wines if you live in Cali. If you ain't in Cali, you're probably SOL. And if you're looking to get a badass pocket knife, I got two for you. Cold Steel Broken Skull Knife, Cold Steel Working Man Knife. Get them at my Amazon store, amazon.com/shop/Steve Austin, or go to the Cold Steel Knives website and check out all their badass knives. Also, one more big shout out to all my sponsors to make this show possible. That's how I'm able to bring this show to you free twice a week. Please support them because they support us. For more info, check out the podcast description to this episode for details. Folks, I am on social media, Twitter and Instagram, at Steve Austin BSR. Folks, I'll be back soon, but until then, my name is Steve Austin, and I will catch your ass down the road.
This has been a Podcast One production. Download new episodes of The Steve Austin Show every Tuesday at podcast1.com. That's podcastone.com.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because...
I got the charcoal mask. Great, because why would I put that on my face when I could drop it in my sink?
This is what I get for multitasking. Ugh, why is charcoal so sticky?
Hello?
Hey, Janice. I am so sorry. I thought I was on mute. No, we don't need to reschedule. I'll just stay off camera.
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed.
Get ultimate protection and durability for your painting project at Menards. Get a paint that combines durability and gorgeous color. Dutch Boy's DuraClean Interior Paint and Primer in 1 offers Stay Clean technology, making your home stay beautiful and clean longer. And with Dutch Boy's easy opening smooth pouring container, transforming your home has never been easier. Save big money on Dutch Boy paints and head into Menards to get your paint project started today.
Save big.